political contests at this year's general election. So the National Party and its partners have successfully provided stable MMP government over two terms of Parliament and through what I'm sure you'll agree, very challenging times. We will be seeking a further mandate on September the 20th. At the end of the day, the public determines the makeup of Parliament by voting in a combination of parties. It's then up to a number of parties to work together to form and maintain stable government. I believe it's important for voters to have as much information about party intentions prior to the election, and I've always been upfront with New Zealanders in that regard. In January, I set out which parties National could potentially work with if returned to government. Our preference is to work with those parties who have a history with us, and they obviously include ACT, United Future and the Māori Party. National has been able to provide strong and stable government with those parties over the last 6 years. I've also said that National could potentially work with the Conservatives and or New Zealand First. While we won't always agree with support parties on all issues, I believe we can work constructively together for the future of New Zealand. So I've been clear on the parties we could potentially work with in government, and today I'm outlining National's position for the 2014 election campaign. Firstly, we are seeking to maximise the party vote for National across the country and in all seats. It's only through delivering the strongest possible party vote that National voters will return a National government. So that's the priority for National, and that's what all of our candidates will be seeking first and foremost. For the electoral vote, we will encourage National Party supporters to give their electorate vote to the ACT candidate in Epsom and the United Future candidate in Nauru. We will continue to seek to maximise our party votes in those electorates, and that's what National Party candidates will be working hard to do. We carefully considered the situation with respect to the Conservative Party and East Coast Bays. In the East Coast Bays, the only realistic option that would enable the Conservatives to get there would be to pull sitting MP Murray McCulley from the ballot paper. That, as I've been saying for some time, I thought was a bridge too far. So there'll be no electorate accommodation with the Conservatives. We would consider working with the Conservatives post-election should the public vote them into Parliament or they win a seat. As I've said previously, we are also prepared to discuss working with New Zealand First if it's returned to the Parliament. In an MMP environment, it's highly unlikely that any one party will govern alone. So in reality, it will be a coalition of political parties that will need to work together constructively. I believe New Zealanders want to know, in the run-up to the election, what the intention of those parties are. So that's why I've chosen to be upfront about this with you here today. New Zealand is heading in the right direction. Under a National-led government, if re-elected, National will continue working for New Zealand. Just in terms of the House this week, this is the last sitting week before we rise for the election. The government intends to complete the three-hour appropriation 2014-15 estimates bill on Tuesday. We have an afternoon of valedictories, mainly from National MPs, on Wednesday. And on Thursday morning, we have extended hours to conclude some non-controversial legislation set piece. On Thursday afternoon, there will be question time, obviously, the adjournment debate.
How much of a factor was the turn-off factor that Colin
Gray... Sorry, I was just going to finish.
Oh, sorry.
Turn off what I'm doing, Kelly. I know it's exciting, but I'll just work my way through it. The good news is I'll be here for question time on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. I've been well into it on Friday. I've been awkward. Sorry, far away.
Yeah, it's injury. Thank you for the transparency. How much of a factor was the turn-off factor of Colin Gray with centre voters in terms of your decision not to do a deal with him?
Well, we weighed up a lot of different factors, but my preference has always been to give voters a choice. So even in Epsom and Ohio, we're absolutely giving National voters a choice, and many of them, I'm sure, will continue to give two ticks for blue. But in the case of East Coast Bays, it became pretty clear that unless we pulled our candidate and didn't give National voters a choice, it was very unlikely that Colin Craig would get there. And on that basis, we didn't feel comfortable with that. We'd like to give voters a choice. and we just felt that it was a step too far for us.
Will you change your mind close to the election? Is there a possibility of that?
No, there's no window of us changing our mind. Look, if the Conservatives win a seat or if they get over 5%, we'll happily sit down and have discussions with them. So, but there's not going to be a last minute change of mind.
So if they got to 4%, you wouldn't have second thoughts about the dangers of losing that share of the centre right vote?
No. Look, I think in the end, we can just lay out our stall, if you like, of the policies and people that we've got. We can put on the record what we've done over the last 6 years and what we'd like to do over the course of the next 3 years. In the end, we've got to leave it to the New Zealand public to vote for the political parties they want to be in the next parliament. And in reality, I suspect if the Conservatives got anywhere near 5%, you might find other New Zealanders vote to get them over the line. We've seen that historically in the past where parties have been either pushed above or under the line, depending on what New Zealanders have thought.
So you feel confident that you can win this election without the Conservatives 1 to 2 to 3% of the vote that they're polling at?
Well, we're going to do everything we can to maximise our vote. I can't predict exactly today what that result's going to look like. But what I can say is that we've constructively worked with United and ACT. We'd like to carry on doing that in the future. And we're very comfortable if National voters want to vote tactically there from an electorate perspective. But outside of that, our sole intention is to maximise our party vote and then sit down after the election with the variety of different parties that we've indicated if they're here and see whether we can put together a government.
Are you going to take your own advice in Epsom? And it's not a case of do what I do, not do what I say, not do what I do?
Yeah, so I've obviously carefully considered that, and the answer is no. I'm going to vote for the National candidate and the National Party. And the reason for that is, in the end, while I'm an Epsom resident, at the forefront, I'm the National Party leader. And I've always consistently voted for National, and I'm going to continue to do that.
Don't do as I do, do as I say?
I don't think so. I think most people would accept I hold a sort of bit of a unique position. I'm the leader of the National Party, and I think there's just a risk of mischief if I start, confusing the picture. In the end, I've been as clear as I possibly can be. There'll be plenty of National voters tonight in those electorates of Epsom Naharu who will sit there and consider what they might do. Some of them probably will follow our encouragement, some of them will definitely not. It's up to them. But my primary responsibility is to the National Party, and around the country our strong message is two ticks for National.
How difficult was the decision in Epsom, given ACT problems this term and the fact that the new candidate who's probably relatively unknown in the electorate?
Yeah, so it was a factor we had to consider. My guess is that there is a definite constituency for ACT out there. That's historically been the case. They may build their party vote a little bit from their current levels on the basis that they have a better chance of getting into Parliament on the back of the announcements we've made today. But look, in the end, it'll be for the voters to determine whether they want to see ACT returned.
What about Peter Dunn, given his track record over the term and resignation? Does he... any questions about him coming back?
Well, in essence, I suppose we answered those questions when we returned him to Cabinet. I mean, we made the call that there were some unanswered questions and some of them still remain unanswered. But in the end, I've got to look forward. And what I'm trying to do for New Zealanders is to say, we're a government that's been there for 6 years. We've provided stability and I think clarity for 6 years. And that's a very important point for New Zealanders, because at this election, if you put to one side people and you put to one side the policies, the really stark choices, I think, will be between a very dominant National Party and between a sort of coalition of parties which are struggling to work together on the campaign trail, let alone in government. I mean, does anyone seriously believe that David Cunliffe could provide stability with Matira Tura and Russell Norman, with .com, potentially with New Zealand First, and potentially others? I think that's a very difficult position to govern the country under. So I'm just trying to be up front and clear with New Zealanders.
Would you rather work with the Conservatives or New Zealand First?
Look, I don't think I'd want to make that choice today. In the end, I'd want to have a serious conversation with both those parties if they're there, a respectful conversation, and see whether something's possible.
Who do you see as the most predictable?
Sorry?
Who do you see as the most predictable?
Well, it would depend on the different circumstances and their requests. Look, in the end of the day, I mean, I can only go so far, and that is give people an indication of who we can work with and what we think is a logical sort of step forward. All of the other discussions about you know, the makeup of confidence in supply agreements, you know, what we'd agree to and what we wouldn't, all of those things I don't think are really best discussed before an election, and it's better to leave all of those afterwards. I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves. We've got to prove to the New Zealand public that we're in a position to have those conversations by, in fact, actually crystallising our vote on election day.
So what's your message to Winston Peters tonight?
Oh, the message is that, you know, I think we could potentially constructively work with New Zealand First. Yes, there's lots of baggage and history there, but Winston's had baggage and history with both sides of the House. But at the end of the day, my strong message to him would be to give a signal to New Zealanders, you know, how he intends to conduct his post-election negotiations if he's here. Because I think it is actually important that New Zealanders know. I suspect his answer will be his consistent one, which is, he won't give you any information at all. I can't control that.
So you are saying to Winston Peters to tell him who he will negotiate with or what his preference would be?
Well, I think that's fair, because when New Zealanders go to the polling booth under an MMP environment, whether we like it or not, they're picking potential coalition parties and partnerships. It's easy to say, well, you know, we'll work it all out later on, but actually, we haven't, since we've had the MMP in 1996, there's never been a majority government. Germany's had it for over 50 years and delivered a majority government once. So history tells you this will be an election that, when the votes are finally cast, that the new parliament will be made up of a various different groupings. And actually, I would have thought all political parties owe it to say who they work with and who they won't.
If Colin Craig had it stood in Rodney, would that have made a deal more likely or easier to do?
No, I don't think so. I mean, in the end, I don't think it would have made a blind bit of difference whether it was in Rodney or East Coast Bay. I think in the end, he wouldn't have got over the line unless we pulled our candidate, and we don't want to pull our candidate.
Did Winston Peters, my old threat, if you like, to stand at East Coast Bay, affect your decision in any way?
No. I mean, look, the reality is that even if we had taken Murray McCully off the ballot paper, then yes, of course, Winston Peters could have stood there and may or may not have been successful. But what's equally true is any well-meaning centre-right person who could have easily stood up and said, I will act as an independent and work with National could have stood, or voters may well have actually given their party vote to National and voted for the Labour candidate. There's absolutely no guarantee that that would have been successful. The only way to make that successful, really, would have been at the very last second pulled our candidate off the ballot paper. And I just, that's not the way we operate.
Couldn't you have put another candidate in and sent a signal to voters there?
Yeah, but I look in the end, you know, I'm comfortable with what we've done. I mean, we've worked with ACT and United for 6 years. They've legitimately won those seats in the past, and I accept that there's a degree of, you know, accommodation that we're giving to our supporters there, but actually that's the nature of MMP, whether you like it or whether you don't. New Zealanders overwhelmingly in a referendum voted to return the system. But look, in the end, there's a certain amount of, you know, you pay your money and you take your chances. You know, I think we've been a good government for 6 years. I'd like to carry on those government relations, and obviously I'd like to be Prime Minister post September the 20th. But in the end, the voters will decide that, and they'll either vote for us and our support partners, or they won't.
What's
because
your advice to the National voters in Māori seats?
To give their electorate vote to the Māori Party candidates and to give their party vote to National. That's been our consistent position.
Because one thing, and it's no secret, Colin Craig knows this, a lot of people think he's crazy. How much of a factor has that played in ruling him out?
Well, I'm not going to answer that question in the way you just posed it, because otherwise I'll be leading three news tonight. Look, at the end of the day, it's for New Zealand voters to determine whether they want to vote for the Conservative Party or not. I accept that if I look at all of the political parties across the spectrum, there's a constituency for each and every one of them. I hope that the largest constituency is the National, but there's a constituency there that would believe in many of the values that Mr. Craig is campaigning on. But look, in the end, we just made the call of we're comfortable with our governing relations and everything else. We'll see how it goes.
How much was personality a factor, though? His personality?
Look, I don't think it was a really dominant factor. I think the bigger factor was we're comfortable with where we're at, and I think to a certain degree we're going to trust the system.
How close did you come to him?
No, we haven't polled, no.
How close did you come?
How close did you come to doing a deal with him, or were you always pretty certain?
I think if I was to be 100% honest, if you'd asked me a year ago, I would have said to you, look, it might have been a bit more of a chance, just the way things were playing out. But I think over the course of the 12 months, there just hasn't been enough movement there, and I just don't think realistically it's been an option.
Have you had socially liberal elements of the National Party lobbying you saying don't do a deal with Colin Craig because they don't want to see you aligning yourself with a party potentially that say opposed to gay marriage?
I don't think it's fair to say that people have been lobbying me, but in the course of going around the country as I do, people have raised the issue, and it's been raised both ways. I've certainly had some people who say they're Conservative voters or have been historically been National voters who are voting Conservatives and they'd like to see us do a deal, and equally I've seen many others who have said the opposite. I think in the end it just comes back to what you're sort of comfortable with. And I'm very comfortable with the position in Epsom and Nauru. I'm comfortable with the fact that there's a National candidate there, and I'm comfortable in the voters will decide. It doesn't mean that Peter Dunne and Dave Seymour will win their seats. It means they're probably more likely to win them, but it doesn't mean that they will win them.
How comfortable would you be having Winston Peters as a minister inside your outside cabinet?
Our governing relations and preference is to have ministers outside cabinet with our support partners. I personally don't think having those support parties inside cabinet works very well. It's too much of a straitjacket in an environment where MMP sort of demands, I think, that those political parties have some flexibility. And it's more likely to blow the government up, because once they're inside cabinet, then they're fully bound by each and every decision made by the government. And I think that that's very difficult. And you can see that with Labor and the Greens. I mean, we're not even into the official part of the campaign yet, and yet last night they're on TV completely disagreeing with each other, and that's going to carry on for the next 8 weeks. I mean, it's Mickey Mouseville. You know, these people can't agree with each other on anything, so how on earth could they govern the country in a formal coalition? Certainly if you had a dominant party like we are, and then you have some parties supporting you, they can strongly agree to disagree on everything other than incompetence and supply issues. And we saw that with the Maori Party in the last 6 years.
So you could have Winston as a minister outside cabinet?
Potentially. I mean, that would all be a matter of him wanting to do that, him wanting to work with National. There's a lot of different factors.
So that's your preference, but it's not a hard
one. The Maori Party come back, will they move outside the cabinet?
Because they have been for the last 6 years, haven't they?
So it's your
the ministers outside cabinet. Yeah, there's only 20 National ministers in cabinet the last 6 years.
So in the case of Winston Peters and others, it's your preference to have them outside cabinet, if at all, but is it a hard and fast rule?
We'll have negotiations, I guess, after the election, and we'll sit down to do it. I think it's very, very unlikely.
Take that as a no, it's not hard and fast, but you don't rule it out completely.
Well, maybe it's not fast, but it's pretty hard. Look, I just don't see it likely. I just don't see that it's going to add to the strengthening of governing for the interests of New Zealanders.
If he makes it a bottom line, because he has in the past insisted on fairly high profile ministerial posts if he's in government, both inside and outside cabinet.
Even when he was Minister of Foreign Affairs, I think he was outside cabinet.
Yeah, when he was Treasurer, he was inside.
Yeah, if you go back to 96, I mean, obviously I wasn't around in 96, but in 96 it was a different deal. National didn't poll nearly as much. He was quite dominant, and that government was very different. And you can see why Labor and the Greens are talking that way, because the Greens are demanding that, because Labor's weak, and the only way to get there would be with a very Green-dominated cabinet. But that's unlikely to be the position that National is in. It's likely to be, if we can win the election in 14, the only way we'll get there is if National's very dominant.
Would you be comfortable with having other New Zealand First MPs as ministers, either outside or inside cabinet?
Well, again, all of those things are negotiations for a different day. It would depend enormously on what happens. I mean, it strikes me that the sort of way MMPs evolved and the way the sort of protocols, if you like, around the makeup of competence and supply agreements have operated has been that, as you get larger, you can exercise more authority. So, if it was a National government that polled in the low 40s and a New Zealand First that polled in the early teens, that might give a lot more power than one where National's much higher and they're much lower.
If you did the going to be unlikely and got a majority in your own right,
yep.
would you still do a deal with those parties that you've had a relationship with so far?
I think it's highly likely we would. I mean, again, you know, we'd have to wait and see, but I think it's highly likely we would, because I remember when we formed the confidence and supply agreements with the Maori Party in both 2018 and 2011, we didn't technically need them to command a majority in the House, but I always felt it gave the government both more balance, a, you know, better perspective, but also fundamentally larger numbers in the event that there was a change in, you know, personnel. And look, realistically, that's always a useful insurance policy to have, so I would have thought we'd like to see.
In policy terms, what added value do you see the ACT Party bringing to your third term?
Well, I mean, they'll campaign, I know, I don't know all of their policies yet, but historically they've campaigned on a more austere, you know, economic prescription than we have had. But in some areas, I think they've taken some leadership. I mean, charter schools was a good example of that. They've certainly around regulation reform and regulatory reform, they've been quite strong there. They've been advocates of a lower tax environment. Now, you know, again, it depends on the size of ACT, you know, how much influence that they have. If they poll 1 or 1.5%, they're not going to have a tremendous amount of influence. If they poll a lot more, they'll have a bit more. But that's the... you know, their positions have broadly been pretty consistent about around education law and order in the economy.
You mentioned charter schools. How likely is it that after this election we'll see more policy put into play that's not really actually campaigned on through?
Well, I can't control what a political party, you know, if we're in the position of putting together a government, comes in and wants the debate to pass on. I mean, if there's any extension to partnership schools, I would have thought it'd be pretty modest. And it certainly wouldn't, you know, I've given my view on this sort of view that ACT expires about widening out partnership schools for the whole state sector, and that's just a non-starter.
Do you have a thing with that their policy on three strikes before a real rate crisis is likely to be a bottom line if they're in a strong enough position to do that? How do you feel about that proposal?
Well, I think it's really unhelpful talking about bottom lines, and with the greatest respect, he's not the leader. So I think, look, in the end, he should focus on his job in Epsom, and I'll focus on my job as National Party leader. And if we're both there after the election, we have a discussion.
So you're not that enthusiastic about policy?
I'm just not so enthusiastic about bottom lines. And in the end, yeah, three strikes was implemented because of our confidence and supply agreement with ACT back in after the 08 election. I actually think it's broadly worked. And being quite a good policy. So, you know, we'll leave any of those other discussions for a later date.
Why do political parties stand or fall on their own merits?
I think they largely do. I mean, in the
end... They're not here, though, because you are handing them a fairly significant job in here.
Well, certainly making it clear that we could work with them, and we are certainly making it clear to national voters that they want a national government re-elected, that they might want to think about their tactical voting. But that's true for lots of political parties. It's not new. I mean, that was true of the Alliance in the Sydney electorate. That's been certainly true if you look at the Marlin.com tie-up. I mean, that is the reality of the way MMP works.
But you're doing a bit more than that. You're doing a bit more than just saying they might have to think about their tactical voting. You're saying do so in this way in these seats.
Well, what we're saying is if they want to do that, we're more than happy with that, and we think it's logical for some tactical voting to take place there. But in the end, it'll be up to those electorates and those voters to determine what they want to do. There'll be plenty of them that they'll give two ticks to National.
This doesn't artificially inflate the significance of two parties that are polling rather poorly at the moment?
I don't think it artificially does that. Look, in the end, it'll be for the voters and those electorates to determine. I mean, look, I think if you look at both of those electorates, they are national party, they're national strongholds from a party vote perspective. So, yep, in the end they might determine that tactical voting is more likely to see a national government return, and if they do and it does, well, we're pleased about that. But, you know, we're being upfront and honest with people. We're saying that's what we think is logical, and I think we can't be any clearer than that.
On water quality, would you like all New Zealand rivers to be safe to swim?
I think swimmable 365 days a year is a very lofty goal that's unlikely to be achieved that probably hadn't been achieved since European settlement. So in reality, the government's got both national policy statements now making that operational through the operating framework, and councils will have a lot of authority to work on how they're going to improve the quality of our waterways. But swimmable is a very, very high and expensive goal. And if we were to make that the national standard, it would have an enormous impact on the cost for ratepayers.
Have you spoken to Nick Smith about
billions,
claims?
I think.
Have you spoken to Nick Smith about claims he believed was threatened with fishing bank?
Yeah, look, I've had a brief conversation with him. I mean, firstly, I think I've seen his the notes that were released by his ministerial advisor that was there. This is a, you know, a version of events presented by you know, an NGO, and on the other side of the coin, another version of events by the minister. There's always going to be a bit of that. There's a bit of history between the two individuals in question. I wouldn't read too much into it.
It's more than just one individual. There's a number of fishing game council members and others who are at the meeting who all seem to take out of what Dr. Smith has said that he was threatening.
Well, I don't believe that's the nature of Nick, and I don't believe that that's an accurate representation on the version of events that I was given. I wasn't there, but that's the version I understand.
Do you think the Fish and Game Council has gone beyond its orbit in terms of some of the stuff it's been doing?
I just don't have a view on that.
Have you spoken to him about whether or not he'll take legal action?
Look, I haven't spoken to him about that, but, I mean, if he sought my advice on it, my advice would be, I think that would be a step too far, it would be a little bit silly. Look, in the end, he obviously feels offended by the comments that have been made, and he feels they misrepresent him, but history tells you that it's not a very productive step to take.
Would it be an unhelpful distraction for you?
Well, in the end, he'll make his own decisions, but... I'd be surprised if he took that step.
Would he have to pay for it himself as he did? I mean, you're at capacity to take those fund ministers in such cases.
I don't have any advice on that, but where ministers have to defend themselves against legal action that's taken, it's wholly appropriate that the taxpayer helps meet those legal costs, because that's the person executing their responsibilities as a warrant holder. If somebody takes legal action, then I think it's a bit different. And the only example I can point to was when Judith Collins took that action against Andrew Little and Trevor Mallard. And in that instance, the government, through the taxpayer, didn't pay. And so I think it's quite a different issue if a minister starts the proceeding.
Do you agree with Nick Smith that people won't vote for fat people?
I think everyone should be careful about being a bit precious. He was making a self-deprecating joke at his own expense. You know, so I think, you know, an overhead comment at his own expense, I don't read too much into it.
Do you absolutely back Nick Smith's version of events, though, over the Fish and Game Council meeting?
Yeah, I've got no reason to believe it's different. Look, there's always going to be... Fish and Game have very strong views on what they think is the way the world should run in relation to, you know, their area of expertise. The government has a slightly different perspective because it's managing a whole lot of different issues, and people feel passionately on both sides. But, you know, for the most part, it's been a pretty constructive working relationship. But as I say, there's been a bit of history between these two guys, and I put it all in the context of that.
Do you think that Fish and Game should not have that role advocating on water quality, for example?
No, I mean, Fish and Game have been one of the bodies that was involved in the Land and Water Forum. They've had a legitimate voice to add to the debate.
Has the government decided whether or not they can advocate, make a submission on the application to leave the reef on the wreck?
Yes, we're in the final stages of looking at it. It's highly likely the government will put in a whole of government submission, and obviously that's got to be in by the 8th of August when submissions close, but it's highly likely we'll put in a whole of government submission.
Do you know whether it will support or oppose it?
Yeah, I've got a very strong sense of what we're doing, obviously, but the final wording of the submission hasn't actually been completed. That's the responsibility of Chris Finlayson, so previously that's till he makes that announcement in a few days.
The 10.5 million windfall that, I guess, is up in the air for the government, do you consider that?
That's not going to influence our view.
at the end of the day, that was a, you know, that was something that was put on the table by, I think, the ship owners or insurers, but that's not going to influence the government's views.
The Mozambique group, who are going to be affected by the wreck, will the government consider offering them any support in making submissions?
That's not our intention, no.
Why can't you just say which way the government will go with this?
Sorry?
Why can't you just say which way the government will go with it?
Oh, because it's just Tahia that the minister responsible when he releases the submissions that will be released does so and has the ability to take you through the whole thing in a total package rather than leave it front and
on your party list, are you disappointed by the number of women?
I think as the President quite rightly put it, the individual electorates decide in isolation the candidate that they want to choose, and they don't do that with regard to the other areas. And there's a lot of very, very high quality women that I would predict are going to win the seats they're standing in now. So the Sarah Downies of the world in Invercargill and Barbara Kruger in Taranaki King Country. So there's plenty of examples there. We have to, you know, continue to work hard to encourage more women into Parliament, and we'll continue to do that. But where we've had some capacity to do that, we're lifting people up through the list. RMG Palmer is a good example of that.
27% is very low, though. Is it time to start considering
some
kind of
double
mandate?
No, we don't
want to
do that.
Do you have any update on the Malaysian diplomatic situation?
No, they're working their way through the process, but I'm confident General will be returned.
Is there any advice on what sort of investigation Jared Bramley's likely to face for that?
Well, civil aviation will conduct that you're aware that the responsibilities for civil aviation were transferred from Jerry Brownlee to Michael Woodhouse, I think on Thursday afternoon, Friday morning. I'm very reluctant to make any comments because it's hugely important that civil aviation conduct their inquiry completely independently.
Have they given you any indication when they'll be done?
They haven't, no.
Do you have any concern about the recent Burmese political situation? I'm from Burma.
Yep.
And any suggestions for the recent political situation, and because we are going to have the general election next year?
Yeah, I mean, look, our view on Myanmar is that they've been taking some very progressive and important steps in recent years to introduce democracy to your country and to improve the outlook for the people of Myanmar. We would accept that it's not perfect, but it's been important and progressive in terms of what they've been doing. And the reason the government in New Zealand has changed its stance and supported the Myanmar government is that that's consistent with what New Zealand does when countries around the world take what we see as positive action. We want to reward that. And I myself have visited Myanmar. The President Thein Sein's been in New Zealand, and I think a lot of what they're doing is very important steps. So we know that there'll always be areas of debate, and we know that there's further reform, and we know they're looking at constitutional issues, but overall we'd say that Myanmar's making good progress.
Have you been given any indication as to when Mohammed Rezaman might return to New Zealand?
I don't know. I know they're working their way through it. It's a sort of a legal process, but as I said to you last week, you know, on an unsolicited basis, President Najib made it quite clear to me that he would return to New Zealand.
Would you expect it to be weeks, months, next year?
I honestly don't know, but I would have thought if I was just purely guessing, because I don't know, more months than weeks, but more months than years. You know, it'll be the foreseeable future. They just need to work their way through a process.
Are you looking at making an announcement on the second harbour crossing, bringing it forward?
I think it's touching that Labor want to try and second guess our policies, but truthfully, no, but it was useful to have them talking about our policies for a day.
The speculation the Reserve Bank's poised to intervene in FX markets, would you be comfortable if they were?
Yes, if they choose to do that, they have a mandate under which they can intervene. My views on intervention are very well known. I think as a long-term policy tool, they're not very effective, but they can have a short-term benefit. I think I would agree with the Governor that New Zealand dollar is overvalued if you compare that against the reduction in commodity prices. So you've seen some reduction since he's made those comments. The Kiwi is 84.40 or 85.40 or something at the moment. But look, overall, we'll leave it to them to decide whether, you know, further intervention is a good idea. Okay.